member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips to the PC. It is Saturday, the 10th of August, Anno Domini 2013, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the, I gotta get better glasses, I just got these. 6 minutes after the hour, we're gonna be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues, I gotta get the news.
And how did last week's show go, since...
Yeah, it was quite interesting for us, for me. I knew Nick had been there. I never got your text that you weren't. And I forgot the first Saturday of the month you're not here.
Yep, I was doing the kids' workshop.
And so fortunately, Dennis was able to come, and we had Mike running the board. So
you guys did great.
Yeah. It's tough not leaving empty holes in the
crowd.
What am I going to say next?
Yeah, you guys did great. There's no question. Well, the Washington Post has announced that it will sell to Amazon's Jeff Bezos for a whopping $250 million. To be clear, Amazon is not acquiring the company. This is a purchase by Bezos as an individual. The Post CEO, Donald E. Graham, states that the 135-year-old company is selling due to years of familiar newspaper industry challenges. Graham says these challenges made his company wonder if there was another owner who would be better. As for why Bezos is a good choice, piles of cash aside, Graham cited his technology and business genius, his long-term approach, as well as his personal decency. In other words, Bezos understands technology, and the Post desperately needs a fresh perspective. The company is no stranger to job cuts, just like the rest of the newspaper industry. According to Bezos, the values of the Post do not need changing, but things will in fact change. Of course, it all has to do with the internet's disruption of traditional news business. Here's an excerpt from Bezos' letter to the Post staff. The internet is transforming almost every element of the news business, shortening news cycles, eroding long, reliable revenue sources, and enabling new kinds of competition, some of which bear little or no news gathering costs. There is no map, and charting a path ahead will not be easy. We will need to invent, which means we will need to experiment. Our touchstone will be readers, understanding what they care about. Government, local leaders, restaurant openings, scout troops, businesses, charities, governors, sports, and working backwards from there. I'm excited and optimistic about the opportunity for invention. It's noteworthy that Bezos has taken on projects outside of Amazon in the past, but this purchase is surely one of his largest commitments unrelated to Amazon. With this deal, the Post says Bezos will not acquire another Washington Post company-owned publication, including it will not acquire Slate Magazine, TheRoot.com, Foreign Policy, or any of those. Catherine Weymouth, the current CEO of the Post, says she will remain in her current role. She says this decision was made with a heavy heart. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Jeff Bezos has purchased the Washington Post. And your choices are, that's great, that's interesting, that's horrible, and who cares about dead tree news? Exactly. So far, we've got a total of 31 votes. Most of you, of course, don't care about dead tree news. I think the point here, of course, is that Bezos will not be doing much dead tree news. He will be looking for other ways to do things.
Yeah, it strikes me as odd that someone so big into the internet business and their electronic book sales are outpacing their physical book sales, and would want a newspaper. And that $250 million doesn't seem like that much to me.
No, really. You know, it would have been a whole lot more years ago, but newspapers are not as valuable a resource as they were. I think the thing is, he's not interested in the newspaper. What he's interested in is the news gathering organization.
Yeah.
You know, what the organization is behind it. Because a lot of people are doing news now. A lot of people, you know, I look at news aggregators like localin1.com, rochester.localin1.com. I get all my local news. For national news, there's a half a dozen places I go to. So it all becomes it becomes a different beast. I don't look at, I used to look at half a dozen papers a day, and I don't anymore.
We've cut back on our physical newspaper subscription quite
a
bit.
Yeah, I mean physical paper.
Right, yeah. We want the Thursday paper because it's got weekend in it, and
right.
and the Sunday paper for the the business section, the comics.
Right.
But most of that stuff you can get online anyway. And the irony is that when the newspaper is published, it's that's news that's 12 hours old.
Yep.
You know, that's old. In fact, a lot of times you go on a news website, you can't find any of those stories from the paper on their front pages because it was 12 hours ago. Lots happened in 12 hours.
You're going to more at least twice before you find those.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you see, speaking of the newspaper, did you see the picture they changed your art column to?
You know.
It's old.
Is it an old picture?
There's no gray in your hair.
It's old. It's an old picture.
But you feel younger at heart.
I feel something at something, I'll tell you that right now. And
we don't want to
know. We don't want to know.
No.
We do not want to know. All right, we're going to go to the phones. Our first caller is Carl from Pottstown, PA. Hiya, Carl. What's up?
Hi, how you doing?
Good. You?
Oh, pretty good. My question is about favorites in Internet Explorer 10. I had an old computer. The old computer used Internet Explorer 8. And whenever I added a favorites, it would automatically go to the favorites list, alphabetize itself. So everything in the favorites list was in alphabetical order. I never had to do anything to put it in alphabetical order. It just did it by itself. Now that I have Internet Explorer 10 with a new machine, it's not doing that anymore. Every time I add a favorites, it goes to the bottom of the favorites list and just stays there forever. It never alphabetizes itself. Is there a way to get these things in alphabetical order in the favorites list in IE 10?
I would. A lot of web browsers do that. The newest bookmark is at the bottom of the list, which you often then have to scroll a long way to get to. I wish they would put the newest bookmarks at the top of the list.
Can't you
that's
right
where
click on it and do the sort order?
Yeah, you might be able to right click and sort, but you may have to go to the favorites folder, not in actually in the favorites menu. We're Googling a way to sort
you
it.
You actually must have set this up in 8 because it doesn't. I don't know that it does that automatically in 8 either, but there is a way to do it, which is in the favorites menu. Right-click any of the websites, and a list of options will appear, and one of the choices is sort by name.
That okay, I'll give that a try.
Is there a keep sorted, maybe? Because what will probably happen is it will sort it now, but it won't keep it sorted by name. So there may be another option under there that says keep sorted or something like that.
I see.
You want to auto sort it.
Auto arrange, I think Windows calls it.
Yeah,
it maybe that's why you can't find it under sort.
They had to come up with a better name. It was, you know, fine the way it was, but you know they got to always get creative. Just like add remove programs.
Right.
They had to change that to programs and features.
Right, yeah. But if you want to remove a program. That was pretty easy thing to find now. Remove a program? It's under Add Remove Programs, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And with in Add Remove Programs, very rarely, or I don't think I ever had to use the add part of it. I used it to remove programs,
yeah, right.
And then I went to Revo Uninstaller, but I never used it to add programs.
Yeah.
Most programs add themselves. So from that standpoint, you can add features of Windows that aren't already there. So I suppose that makes sense in the renaming. How about you have two separate control panels, one to add Windows features and one to remove other programs?
Yeah. Right. Anyway, I would give that a try.
Okay, I'll do that. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
So I'm seeing some answers at Microsoft where some people are saying that works in IE10, some say it doesn't work in IE10, but it may also depend on if you're running the, what do they call it now? What used to be, the formerly known as Metro IE10.
Right.
In Windows 8.
Well, and that's
or the classic IE10.
Right, right. Yeah. And that's the other part of the problem. I people are constantly saying, I saved this and I don't see it. Well, go to the other IE.
Yeah.
What do you mean the other IE? Yeah, okay.
They're completely separate programs and don't have any link to each other.
Yep.
Now, how hard would that have been? to have a shared bookmark
apparently
folder.
Impossible. I mean, they have hundreds of billions of dollars, thousands of programmers. Theoretically, some of the brightest people in the industry are being paid by Microsoft. They can't figure out how to not have two different versions of the browser.
Or at least a shared bookmark folder, a shared history folder.
Yeah.
That should have been easy.
Yeah, you would think. All right, our next caller is Sam from Rochester, New York. Hi, Sam, what's up?
Guys, my printer's acting funny, and I'd like to know. I'd like to get it repaired. I'd like to get a free estimate, but I'd also like to know if it costs so much, where's a good place to buy a printer?
Well, that's three questions. So,
okay.
General, printers have become disposable. So when they break, you throw them away and buy a new one. So there are a couple of printer repair companies left. There's one in East Rochester called ABC Electronics. And there's one in, I think he's in Penfield, JP Computers, and they still do printer repairs. I doubt they give you free estimates because it takes time to tear the printer apart and figure out what's wrong with it. The problem is you can buy a new printer for $50 that works pretty good, lasts a year or so, and you throw it away and buy a new one. And actually, I've almost seen people... When it's time to replace your ink tanks, it's $50 for new ink tanks, black in color. So they throw away the whole printer and buy a new printer and get new ink tanks.
Yeah, except that the ink tanks are not as full.
Right. Yeah, it's a starter ink tank when you buy the printer.
So Sam, what type of printer do you have?
I have a Lexmark X7170.
Is that a color, black and white?
Color and black and white.
Ink or laser?
Ink.
Yeah. The inkjet printers are very, very inexpensive because the ink is very expensive. I think someone worked it out once. It's like $4,000 a gallon.
Uh-huh.
And you get much better consumable cost out of a laser printer. Laser printers start about $150, but your cost per print is much lower because the toner cartridges last longer. That an $80 toner cartridge lasts for 4,000 or 5,000 pages. So you're looking at 1 or 2 cents per page for laser
black and white.
For black and white toner, ink is usually a dollar or two a page. Your $20 cartridge will last for 100 pages times four colors. Color laser, I was pricing one out for a customer this week. Color lasers start about $300, and we actually found a multifunction print, copy, scan, fax from HP for $375. Color, laser, print, copy, scan, fax.
Nice.
That used to be a $50,000 printer.
Yeah.
So they've come down a bit in price.
Just a tiny bit.
Just a little bit, huh?
Yeah. Usually when you look at the higher quality business printers, where you're paying $400, $500, $600 for them, they tend to be worth repairing. You know, it might be worth putting $200 into repairing. But when you're looking at the consumer printers that are, in the $100 and under, it usually isn't worth it. Now, perhaps a prior question is, are you sure it's the printer malfunctioning and not the computer doing something wrong?
When I turn it on, I want to print something. The first copy prints good. The second copy, it misses the text. It skips.
That is a clogged inkjet nozzle or ink head. The printer will have a clean the heads procedure, either from the front panel of the printer itself or in the printer software in the computer. What happens with liquid ink printers is that the ink dries up and clogs the nozzles. So if you don't use it enough, it dries up, and if you use it too much, it wears out. So you've got a catch-22 there. So typically what you often see is every time you turn the printer on, it will go through a cleaning cycle, which uses a little bit of ink, and you can hear the heads sort of moving back and forth. Eventually the heads just wear out. Some printers you can replace the head. Some printers it's cheaper to buy a new printer.
Okay.
All right, we got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 20 minutes after the hour, sound bites on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Bill from Webster, New York on the line. Welcome, Bill. What's up?
Hey, guys. I'm running Windows 7. It's completely up to date with all the latest Windows updates. And I'm also running Firefox, the most recent version. It has a very interesting characteristic, and I don't know if it's a Windows issue or a Firefox issue, but two or three times a day, you'll be browsing, and for no apparent reason, all of a sudden, the window will go away. You'll be looking at your desktop, but if you look down in the toolbar, the icon still has the gray circle around it, like Firefox is open, and the mouse is frozen. And if you wait like 12 to 13 seconds, all of a sudden the window will pop open again, and everything works. Any ideas?
Wow. Can't hear you.
Go back to a previous Firefox? Are you running 22 or 23?
Whatever the current one is. I'm not at the computer, so.
Yeah. Well, the current is 22, but if you're in the beta channel, you'll probably have 23.
No, it would be the 22 then. I'm not in the beta channel. And
that's
really weird.
It started
a couple of updates ago. Firefox updates, that is.
Yeah, it's one of the things we've noticed with Firefox is that it's kind of doing auto updates, but they're doing pretty major updates pretty quick. I think, a year ago? Was it version 4? A major update comes out like every 2 months or something like that.
Yeah, what's really interesting is, like, the computer freezes, you know, the mouse won't move and stuff. So that kind of made me think maybe it's a Windows 7 issue, but then it'll pop open and everything runs just fine.
Here's what I would suggest you do to start troubleshooting this. I would turn off all my extensions.
In Firefox?
Yes.
Hold the shift key down or alt key down while you launch it, turns them all off?
I think so. I don't remember which that is, but yes. Because do it this way. Start with the Firefox extensions. Turn them all off. See, and that means you're going to, you know, whatever cool things you've got aren't going to be there, but see if that solves the problem. Work with it for a few days or whatever it takes. And if that solves the problem, then you know it's one of those, and now it's just a matter of turn them on one at a time until it starts happening again, right?
Okay, I was hoping you were going to say something clever we've seen this before.
Yeah, we have not seen this before, but the problem really becomes there are so many extensions.
Right.
And that it's almost impossible to know. Now, I do know that some people have had this problem and that it can be caused by any one of several problems. For example, the web developer toolbar and a couple of others. But really knowing what combination on your particular machine made it happen, turn them all off, start turning them all on.
Well, the thing that drives me crazy is I can't associate it to a particular activity. It's not like it happens when I click on something.
Right.
Sometimes I won't even be touching the mouse, and all of a sudden it will just point, go away. So that's been the frustration.
Right, which is why I think it has something to do with an extension, which does what it does in the background, right?
Right.
Okay.
Well, I can try shutting off all these extensions. And see what happens.
Yeah, and that would include one of the things that I would do, just for grins and giggles, I would turn off Java and Flash as well.
Okay.
That's kind of a general saying.
Right. Well, I've turned off Flash anyway. I don't. You know, any site that I go to that requires Flash, I just don't see anything. I don't go there. I don't care anymore.
And most websites have switched to something better anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah. Sorry.
All right. Talk to you later.
Yep. Yeah. That's becoming more of a problem in general with stuff like this. We have so many extra toys that we add to everything.
No.
Yeah. That it becomes a problem. One of the things I have, I am running here, I am running Chrome as my main browser, and in it I'm actually looking at I'm in Google Drive, and so I'm typing in a list of all the questions that Steve will then copy into the
podcast.
Thank you. Couldn't think of the word. Well, I've been up since 6 o'clock this morning. I've been at market and I'm tired. So he'll put that in the podcast. So I've got that open on another screen because I'm under Linux. On another screen, I've got Firefox open with the Hangout. If you want to join our Hangout, just go to my YouTube channel and you can join the Hangout. Send me a request in Google Plus, and I'll add you for next week. And every once in a while, I get logged out of both, and it just happened a few minutes ago. Now the Hangout apparently still keeps running, and everything is fine, but I have to log back in before it will come back again. For me, everybody else apparently is still seeing it. I'm just the one who doesn't. I don't get it. But again, it's, you know, you're running multiple browsers all going kind of to the same. So who knows where the problem
you're
is.
You're just special.
I'm special. I am that. I have my own sauce. our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's up?
Hi. I was wondering if you guys are familiar with Komodo,
thanks for calling.
Ice Dragon and Komodo Dragon. Browsers?
I have seen them. Familiar is not a term I would use.
I've been testing Ice Dragon, and I kind of like what I see out of it, that it's based over the Firefox core, but yet they've tweaked it, you know. They've got their own integrated DNS service and some cool things like that.
Right. Well, it's supposed to be a very secure browser. I know that much. It's supposed to be pretty cool. The company Komodo, why do I know them? I know them from something else.
Firewall?
Yeah. The Komodo Firewall. That's it.
Didn't they also do a backup?
Yep.
So, you know, the company is certainly reputable. And the nice thing about it is I know it's supposed to be super secure. So it essentially scans web pages for any kind of drive-by malware before it shows it to you,
mm-hmm.
which is a great idea. They've got their, you're right, they have their own DNS service, so theoretically it's faster.
Right. The Komodo Dragon is for people who are really familiar with Chrome.
Yep.
And I guess that's based off the Chrome browser with their own enhancements added to it. I also like that Ice Dragon works with a lot of the add-ons that, that Firefox uses. Not that I use too many, but there's a couple that I like. It seems to be the more add-ons you put in and the more extensions you put in, the slower the things get. So.
Yeah, right. Right. Well, yeah, and they've customized their own. You're right. They've customized their own set of plugins. You probably don't get everything, but... Supposed
pretty
to be
much
super
everything
fast.
I've wanted to load has been there because it takes you right to their add-on page.
Oh, nice.
It takes you right to Mozilla's add-on page.
It's been on, you know, it's one of those things. It's been on my list of things to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it's a long list, so.
One cool add-on for Firefox that works in Ice Dragon is they have an extension that lets you view the background in Google in black. So when you're on the computer late at night and you don't want this white background, you can get white text over a black background.
Yeah. They also have, who else? Chrome has that. It's called Lights Out, I think.
Well, a nice feature. Boy, it sure saves your eyes, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, I was just wondering if you had any input on it. So,
now,
you do get the chance when you get that precious free time.
Yeah.
I would love I'd love to hear your take on it.
I would use the word mythical as opposed to precious, but yes.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah, I think, like I said, that's why it was familiar. It's on my list of things to look at. Komodo, C-O-M-O-D-O, by the way, if you're looking for it. Dragon is the Chromium-based one, and Ice Dragon is the Firefox-based one. So, couple of cool-looking little products. I just haven't had time. I wish I did.
There's too much stuff.
Too much stuff.
Yeah.
I remember you complaining about Star Trek.
Yeah.
Back in the day, you used to be able to follow every single thing there ever was about Star Trek.
And only the books came out once a month.
Right.
And then there's 27 series that come out once a week.
Right. Right. All right. Our next caller is Victor from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Victor. What's up?
I just like your opinion on something. I've been using Foxit Reader instead of Adobe Reader for the last month or so, and I find it pretty neat. What do you guys think?
It's the only one I use.
Yep, same here.
Okay, great. I was just curious on that.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, Adobe's Reader, so you can read PDFs and things like that. Thank you, Victor. Is a nice product, but a lot of people find that Adobe's products are not terribly secure and kind of bloated and a little slow. So for those people, I'm one of them. Foxit, which is an entirely separate company, it has nothing to do with Firefox or anything else. Just called Foxit,
right?
Has their own reader. Has several products actually. Has their own reader that. You will do everything that that Adobe's Reader will do, and is very nice. It's free. It has lots of features. So if you're a fan of reading PDFs with all the features nice and free, then check out Foxit. They're up to, what, 6?
Yep. And then Apple has its own PDF reader built in called Preview. It will do graphic images as well as PDFs. We've actually had 3 or 4 customers this week get stuck with an interesting confusion. They go to a website, and the website says you must have Adobe Reader to view these files. And so they click the button and download Adobe Reader, and then they get confused about what to do next. And the problem is you don't need Adobe Reader.
Right, you need a reader.
And the website doesn't know you already have one.
Right.
And so one customer had downloaded Adobe Reader like 27 times, never installed it because it didn't say you need to install it after you download it.
Right.
So it just says click here to download, and couldn't understand why things weren't working. So it's a user training issue that she just needed to double click the PDF file and it would have opened in the Apple Reader anyway. But the website can't know you already have a PDF reader.
Nor should it know.
Yeah.
No website should be able to wander around inside your machine and find out what you have installed.
Yeah.
That's a feature, people.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that. And Chrome has its own built-in PDF reader as well, unless, of course, you've turned it off, because I turn off Flash, and that turns off all the Adobe features.
The later Firefox has a PDF reader built in, and there are PDF reader plugins available for Safari on the Mac and Windows as well. But what's interesting is most people don't like the built-in plugins, because when you go to open a PDF in your browser, which is built in into the later Mac OSs too, it takes forever because PDFs are generally large files. So you click the button and nothing happens. And then you might notice a progress bar at the bottom of the screen. It's not in your download progress bar, and it's not in your browser progress bar. It's the PDF plugin's own progress bar.
Right.
And then it can take a few minutes, especially if it's a multi-page PDF, to view.
With pictures and everything else in it.
Right. And then 99% of the time, you want to download it to your computer anyway.
Right.
So I wish that was a big tip for a long time, is turn off the automatic PDF viewing and just download the stupid thing, because that's what you want anyway.
Right. All right, we're going to take a break. Ha, ha, ha. But we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites.
I like the other tune that we came in with the last break.
Yeah, that one. Oh, I like that one, too, but not as much as I like
the
other
one. No, that's more 30s.
All right, here's a question.
All right, ask it.
Does Apple still have its mojo? The company's board of directors reportedly asked CEO Tim Cook this question, expressing concern that the company hasn't shaken up the tech industry for some time.
A year?
Citing unnamed sources, Fox Business Charles Gasparino said Apple's board of directors, which counts former Vice President Al Gore as one of its members, recently met with Cook to express its concern about the pace of innovation at the company. This is Apple's own board of directors. Apple hasn't introduced a game-changing product since the iPad in early 2010, and Gasparino said the board is getting impatient. What have they had lately, Gasparino said. They had the iPad and a few other things, but they don't have anything innovating from what came from Steve Jobs, and that concern is basically manifesting into pressure on Tim Cook to innovate and to do something fast. Cook regularly speaks to analysts on quarterly earning calls and has reiterated that the company has many incredible products in the pipeline. When questions about whether Apple may launch a TV set in the coming months, Cook often says the category is of intense interest to the company. However, these talking points aren't new, and thus far Apple has little to show for itself aside from the iPad Mini, a successful product for the company, but not a breakthrough product. Apple has hinted at developing both a TV as well as a smartwatch, but it's unclear whether those products will ever actually hit the shelves. In the meantime, companies such as Google, Samsung, and Microsoft are innovating in areas of web services, hardware, and entertainment with products such as the Chromecast, Galaxy products, and Xbox One. By comparison, Apple looks like it's coasting on its previous hits, one of the reasons behind its significant drop in stock price. However, Apple has been acquiring companies at a rapid rate and reorganized around a new command structure. It is also still one of the most valuable companies in the world and sits atop a monumental pile of cash. The tech giant certainly has all the tools to shatter its image as a complacent giant, and it may do so in the coming months. So what's your take on Apple's innovation slump, if indeed there is one? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, it's interesting that it was only 3 years ago. So Apple has had five revolutionary products in 30 years, and they've been accelerating their pace in the recent years. In the last 10 years, they've had three. So 3 years is too long to wait for a completely revolutionary product.
Well, it really comes down to, now that Jobs is gone, where's our mojo?
Yeah. And does the rest of the team still have the mojo?
That's exactly
Scott Forstall is gone. Some say he was to blame for the iOS skeuomorphism that they're getting rid of. Bob Mansfield tried to retire last year. They brought him back, and now he's leaving. He was senior vice president of hardware. He's leaving again to focus on basically, well, it wasn't that I'm leaving to spend time with my family excuse most executives give. He's going to focus on developing new products is sort of vaguely how they're working on it, so maybe they're trying to get him.
Do these people not realize the easiest way to finally retire is to send somebody pictures of your business?
Yeah.
Then immediately you're asked to retire.
Then you have
and you
to
can
leave.
Go.
Yeah. Yeah. Bob Mansfield is working on special projects. Mark Papermill, they hired from IBM, got sued by IBM over a non-compete clause, fought to keep him, and then he left a year later.
Yeah. So well, but you see the point.
Yeah, the Apple executives are dwindling.
Exactly. And so the question becomes, Tim Cook is the president of Apple, or CEO, whatever his title is. Is he? So ultimately, he's responsible. And this comes down to what I was saying for years, is that Apple was always a cult of personality. Nobody ever questions if something great was in the pipeline when Steve Jobs was in charge,
right,
because it was Steve Jobs.
But he was still relying on Johnny Ive and Phil Schiller and Bob. And nobody knows.
But nobody cares about that.
Yeah?
Nobody cares about that. The fact is, it was Steve Jobs at the top of the list. And because he was there, you always believed something great was just around the corner.
Yep.
Now they need to see that something great because there's no more faith.
Yeah.
And this is coming from their own board. That's a sad thing.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what that does to the stock price.
What's interesting is that a couple of members of the board, Bill Campbell, who is currently CEO of Intuit, used to be work at Apple. He was in charge of the Claris software division. And we got Al Gore. We got Ron Sugar, Lord Sugar from the British Dragon's Den.
Right.
Millard Drexel from J. Crew. Arthur Levinson from Genentech. Andrea Young from Avon. CEO of Avon is on Apple's board. So, and then Robert Iger from Walt Disney. Very few of these people have anything to do with technology or computer technology except Bill Campbell from Intuit.
Right.
We've got media people. We've got sales people. They say that Ron, wrong Sugar. This is Ronald Sugar from Northrop Grumman. And, you know, aerospace. So they have a wide ranging board, but think of the airplane industry. The Boeing 787 Dreamliner. You know, it's been 20 years since the last major airline renovation, but 3 years is too much in the computer world.
But what they're looking at is Tim Cook has had no major innovations.
Right.
That's what it comes down to.
Yep.
It's an interesting question. All right, our next caller is Brian from Mumford, New York. Welcome, Brian. What's up?
Hi. How you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Okay. I'm in the market for a new desktop. I just wondered if I have any options besides Windows 8.
Oh, sure. You could go Mac or you could go Linux.
Right.
Yeah.
And a lot of companies will still put Windows 7 on it. I know Dell will. If you insist on it, they will do what they call a downgrade. And I don't know how that's a downgrade in any way, shape, or form. It's a good operating system and superior to Windows 8. Windows 8 is just Windows 7 on top of it.
Yeah.
With a few changes. So, you can still call a number of companies and still get Windows 7.
I see. I never got a national company. It's just...
Yeah, well, even a lot of local vendors.
Yeah, the local guys are more than willing to put Windows 7. We're still putting Windows 7 on our machines when people want it.
Yeah,
as long as Microsoft keeps...
Curious. How about... somebody said a Mac Mini, I could use my same...
Yeah, the
monitor and keyboard.
Yeah, the
is
Mac.
Is that true or no?
Yes, the Mac Mini is Apple's least expensive computer too. Starts at $599 for a dual i5,
yeah.
And it's a sort of bring your own stuff. You plug in your existing keyboard, mouse, and monitor,
mm-hmm.
And it's a great migration machine because you can use a lot of your existing peripherals, and it gets you into the Mac world and gets you into a modern computer with the least. Anguish, I guess, is a word.
Okay, I just, my XP's machine died, and I'm just using the iPad right now.
Yeah, and a lot of people use a Mac Mini hooked up to their television. It has an HDMI port on it as well, and you use your TV as the monitor, and quite a few people use it as a media server for going to websites and displaying photos and playing movies on it, and using that as your home media server, too.
Okay. As far as PCs go, I can just ask around and
most people
have Windows 7.
Most of the local vendors will be able to put Windows 7 on a machine.
Okay, thank you.
Right.
Sure.
The big thing that prevents many people from going to a Mac or Linux is that they already have a bunch of programs that are Windows programs.
And many of those programs are available for the Mac as well, or equivalent programs available.
Right.
And most of the companies will give you a side grade. So if you have a Windows program, you can often call the company and get the Mac version of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, I'm pretty well set then. Thank you.
Yep. There you go. There's a great website called alternative.to where you can type in the name of a program and it will give you alternatives For example, if you were to type in Windows Internet Explorer, it gives you Opera and Chrome and Firefox and Safari. So if you were to type in, for example, AutoCAD,
Google Sketch. Google sold SketchUp, I think.
Yeah, SketchUp is
good. Photoshop is another popular graphic program, you've got programs like GIMP from the open source community, or Pixelmator, or Acorn in Mac-specific programs as well. GIMP is available for the Mac as well. One of the nice things about the Mac being based on Unix is that most of the free and open source Unix programs have been ported to the Macintosh because it's pretty easy to do.
Yep.
So you've got that huge library of free software you can use as well.
Yep. All right. Have we got time for another call? Yes, we do. And that's Steve from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Yeah, hi. I'm definitely an amateur. This is a basic question. What's the difference between email and texting?
Basically, it's where you get it. And there's two things that are majorly different. The big difference between email and texting is the texting is a maximum of 160 characters. Emails can be as big as you want, and they can have pictures and whatever you want to attach to them.
Although they usually stop at 10,000 characters.
Well, yeah.
and then a yes. Second message comes along.
Right. an email program you would get through an email program, and then you can do that on your computer, on your tablet, on your phone. Texting is generally a phone only thing.
Oh, okay.
And works over the cellular network rather than over the internet.
Although you can do, I'm going to blur that line a little bit by using something like Google Voice or Talkatone or one of those to do it as well.
Apple's iMessage program will use the internet to send a text messages if it can, because then you don't pay for texts. Typically with a cell phone, you pay for every text you send or receive.
I don't even know.
Or you have to buy a plan. You have to buy a plan that has a number of texts as part of that plan.
But generally speaking, for the average user, email can happen on any device. Texting requires a phone.
Now, when I do email, before I read it, where does it reside? After I read it, where does it reside?
That depends.
And when I delete it, where does it reside?
Well, theoretically, when you delete it, it resides nowhere anymore. But where it usually goes is in the trash, which you can set up your system to delete every few days or every hour or whatever you want it to do.
Okay.
As to where it resides, it depends. If you have a POP account, POP, Post Office Protocol, version 3, POP 3, then what generally happens is the email is loaded down to your machine and erased from the server, so it only exists on your machine.
But before that, when someone sends you a message, it goes to the mail server at your mail host. So Roadrunner, Frontier, Google, it sits on one of their computers until you tell your computer to go get it.
Okay, once I do that, does it delete itself from the server?
In general, POP3 does, yes. But there is another protocol called IMAP, I-M-A-P, Internet Messaging Something Protocol. And what that does is it leaves it on the server and just shows it to you. So that if, for example, I use IMAP with Gmail, so I can look at all my mail on my computer, I can look at all my mail on my tablet. I can look at all my mail on my phone, and it's all the same mail. If I read it, it gets read in all of those places. If I delete it, it's gone from all of those places because it's really only living on the server, and I'm just looking at a window into it.
Oh, I see.
Unfortunately, one of the major local mail providers, Roadrunner, does not offer IMAP service. They are only POP. But Google and Yahoo and pretty much most of the internet mail services will do IMAP for you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Yep. My pleasure. Thank you.
And we can muddle it even more after the underwriter messages by talking about instant messaging.
We're done. We're done with that. Listen, we are going to listen to some interesting messages from remember, we are a member-supported station, so our members are going to talk about how they support us, and then we'll be back with a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We have Dave Enright, we have Steve Ray, we have me, Nick Francesco, and we have all of you. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And we'll be back with a whole lot more of Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into our second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
When I have my mic on, you sound like you're echoing.
It's there's some weird crossover between those two mics.
Yeah, so lately, the past month or so, I've just been turning my mic off because, like I say, it sounds funny.
Yeah. That's just Nick. No.
That's just
Nick. It is something.
I wasn't going to say that.
It is something in the mic. I've noticed that for the past few weeks. Yeah, when Dave's it's like when Dave's mic is on, your gain turns way down and it's his mic picking you up.
Yeah, it's very weird.
For better broadcasting.
Yeah.
So, it's easy to take Netflix and Spotify for granted at a time when fiber optic cables can send HD movies and high-quality audio to our computers in minutes. But according to AOL's second quarter earnings report on Wednesday, more than 2.5 million people still subscribe to AOL. I'll let you absorb that for a moment. 2.5 million people. Now, that does represent a drop of 15% from the same quarter last year, but it's still a hefty portion of the country. There are roughly 14 million households in the United States. Do a bit of math, that works out to about 2.2%. 2.2% of American households still do AOL dial-up. Not all of those people...
Well, don't do it. Subscribe to it.
Well, that's
next paragraph.
Not all of these people are aware that they're still paying, which makes AOL's continued earnings from dial-up services a particularly genius form of memory hole leeching. But then there are those who either lack access to broadband or can't afford what's in their area. About 17% of dial-up users say there's no broadband where they live. 35% say the price needs to fall before they'll adopt it. Not everyone contained in AOL's 2.5 million subscriber figure lives in rural or poor areas. Still, it's a good reminder that even as much of the country adopts newer broadband technologies, there's a risk that some might get left behind. Are you still on AOL dial-up? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Whatever happened to member Google? Was going to
I remember
offer,
Google. I think they're still around.
Was going to offer free internet.
They do in Topeka.
Right. What they do is this.
Where they have their fiber service.
Wherever they offer their fiber service, if enough people sign up, and I forget what the percentage is, 90%, 95% of a neighborhood, of an area, and they designate what an area is, they will offer it free to schools and to people below a certain income level.
And how fast do you think it would catch on here?
Instantly.
Thank you.
We should have it. We should have it.
Oh,
but what's interesting,
they've got more cities on their list now.
I understand. Is Rochester, New York one of them?
Austin, Texas, and Provo, Utah, they've added. So they're outside of the Kansas suburbs now.
Yes. Is Rochester, New York one of them?
Not yet.
Then I don't care.
But they're out of Kansas.
They're out of Kansas.
So that's a good sign. Yeah.
They're not in Kansas anymore, Toto. Here's the thing. I sympathize with these AOL users because I canceled my AOL service. This is many, many years ago, okay? I canceled my AOL service, and the next month it was on my bill. on my somebody,
there's a hilarious
and then the
audio.
Next month and the next month and the next month, and I kept doing it. Finally, what I did was closed that account.
Yep.
I closed my bank account, and then they started dunning me for the money.
Yep.
And I finally wrote back to them and said, I have now copied my lawyer and the Attorney General of the United States. Here is the date I said I was disappearing from you people. Here is your response saying, thank you for having been a customer. We're now done. And you've been still charging me every month. I have had to close this account. If you harass me anymore, I will take you to court. That's when they stopped.
There's a hilarious video. I'm trying to find it. A guy calls up to cancel AOL, and this happens with any, you know, your phone service, your TV service. A customer retention specialist comes on the line to try to convince you not to leave, and they'll start offering more and more stuff. You know, free this, free that. And so this poor guy, it goes on for minutes and minutes and minutes, and he just keeps repeating, "I want to cancel my account. I want to cancel my account. I want to cancel my account." And the person on the other end keeps going on and on and on about, "You sure you want to do this? We'll give you a free month, or we'll give you a free." "I want to cancel my account. I want to cancel my account. I want to cancel my account. I want to cancel my account." Just over and over and over again.
Yep. Yes, 2.5 million people still with AOL. Yes.
It used to be we had a lot of business travelers that would subscribe to AOL because it's a single nationwide dial-up internet service. So whatever city you happen to travel to that week, you know you can dial into AOL. But now with broadband wireless being pretty much so ubiquitous, you can almost always find a Starbucks.
Right.
That even that isn't as necessary anymore. But there's still rural people that still have to have dial-up.
Right.
Well, with even my phone, I've got the 1 gig plan. And I tie into more free Wi-Fi.
Yep.
So I'm not using any of my data. And because, you know, it's so prevalent all over the place. I mean, there's not too many places you can't go that you can tie into free internet.
Right.
Coffee shops, even car repair. You can be sitting there at Delta Sonic. You can get your car washed and everything else and tie into their free internet.
Well, that's the main place I use more than 2 gig. I have unlimited still. And the reason I won't get rid of it is because driving back and forth to my daughter's college, that's a couple of days worth of driving, and my wife sits in the front seat and does Castleville. And because I set up a Wi-Fi hotspot, and I can do that because I'm on Verizon, and Verizon was given a bunch of Spectra from the federal government, and one of the deals was they you were allowed to use it as a hotspot.
Well, that's one of the other things, though, I found very fascinating. I just switched back over to Verizon. And before, you know, you used to have friends and family and do up this phone list.
Yeah, yeah.
You pick five.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't have to do that anymore.
Free phone calls to every Verizon customer in the whole world.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter whether you're calling a landline or anything else. It's free to wherever. I mean, out of country, it's fine, but, you know, for Kathy and I, it's just, you know, the cell phones, the text, and the one thing we keep down is searching the web because we only got the 1 gig.
Right.
But unlimited phone and text, and being, you know, especially but if
90% of what I do is on the internet. I would rather have unlimited data.
That's why they're not giving it to you.
Yeah, exactly.
That might be somewhat of a legitimate argument the phone companies have. People aren't calling as much. So the unlimited phone calls are losing money. They're data-ing more. Can we make data a verb?
No. Hell no.
Well, my best friend in the world, Scott and Katie, I can get on the phone with Scott. And, I mean, he's not in New York City. And we can talk for a good hour and a half sometimes.
Yep. My wife and her sister talk every morning for an hour. And my sister-in-law is in Arizona, and I don't care.
Yeah,
they can just chat away.
Yeah,
She's in Arizona, and you do care about that.
Good perspective.
You might care if she got closer.
Yeah, Yeah.
You're one of those strange people that like your in-laws.
I like my in-laws. I like my father-in-law. I love my mother-in-law. I love my sister-in-law. I love her husband. I will never say anything bad about them in public. So, the... No, I do. I love them. I love them. I do. They're good people. And I said that. I've said that many times. I love my in-laws, which leaves a rich comic field lying fallow. It really does. I hate to say that part of it, but it's true. It's I do like them. Listen, let's go back to the phones. But I don't think any of them are listening. Our next caller is Bert, who apparently is mowing the lawn in Palmyra, New York. Welcome, Bert. What's up?
Hey, my kids, God bless them, got together and gifted me a real nice HP 21.5-inch monitor.
Nice!
LED backlit, LCD thing, you know, on and on and on.
Yeah.
They managed not to think about the fact that I run Linux Mint Debian, and it's an HP monitor, and they only offer Windows drivers.
Yeah.
I've scrounged around, and there's something I haven't thought of to be able to run this thing. It's
edid.bin.
Say again?
Edid.bin. E-D-I-D dot B-I-N. What type of graphics card do you have?
Boy, I forget offhand. The computer is a Fit PC 3 Pro Mint Box.
All right, here's the deal. Most of the newer graphics cards... have a set of utilities for the graphics card. For example, at home I have, well, no, let's take at work where I actually have a big monitor because RIT bought it. I have this huge monitor at work. And when I first brought it up, it was 640 by 480 on, you know, 60 feet of screen. So there is a, in the NVIDIA settings, because they have an NVIDIA card, one of the things you do is query the monitor. And it has a file called edid.bin. And I forget what that stands for. ID is identification, but I forget what electronic device
extended
identification.
Extended display.
Well, extended display identification. There you go. Edid.bin.
And basically, that the monitor has this setting in it, and it tells the computer, I can do this range of frequencies, and I can do this range of resolutions.
Right.
And then the computer is supposed to tell the video card, okay, match one.
Right. But that doesn't necessarily happen automatically in all versions of Linux.
Right.
So you should be able to find either a utility in your repository.
Yeah.
Or it's a setting in your graphics card software that lets you query the EDID.
Okay. Okay. Sounds good.
There
I'll
you go.
Look around.
Good luck.
Thank you very much, guys.
Yep.
And that's often an issue in the Mac and Windows as well. But since they're both Mac and Windows are I guess, better supported operating system, they have large companies behind them, you usually don't see that problem. When you plug in a monitor, the operating system says, oh, okay, I'll do 1280 by 1024 at 75 hertz. No problem.
Yeah. And that's what mine at work did. So the first time, like I said, I booted it up and it was horrible. And then I ran the software and rebooted it. And bang, I'm in, you know, 1920 by 1600 or whatever it is. And it's a beautiful thing. I'm running Linux Mint here. And if I do, if I search my cache, my repository, I find edid-decode. There's a Perl library to find it. That's nice. If you want to write your own, there you go. And read edid. So there it is. And generally speaking, edids are part of the Visa PNP monitors, but most of the new monitors have an edid. Extended display identification. That's what it stands for. Very nice. So check that out. That'll give you some idea as to what to do to set your monitor better. And then, of course, you have to have a graphics card that'll handle that.
Yep.
If the best your graphics card will do is 800 by 600, I don't care how big your monitor is, you're kind of done. That's the way that works.
Of course, if you don't mind sitting 20 feet away from it, that might be fine.
That might be fine. So,
well,
yeah.
And, see, and now that's actually a trick going back to putting your computer on your television. You typically do sit 10, 15 feet away from your television. So if you, and television displays, we talk about high-definition television. Well, high-definition television is 1920 by 1080.
Right.
That's a very low-definition computer.
Right.
So when you plug your computer into your television and you sit a foot from it, like you do your TV, your computer monitor, the picture looks pretty crappy because the dots are so big, no matter what's... So a 20-inch HDTV is 1920 by 1080. A 70-inch HDTV is 1920 by 1080. With
right.
bigger pixels, and you sit farther away.
Right.
So people have complained over the years, why does a 20-inch computer monitor cost $500 and a 20-inch television cost $100? Because the computer monitor is much higher resolution.
Yeah. Yeah. Even with the new HD stuff,
yeah.
I love high def, and then to do Blu-ray.
I have a Blu-ray player, and I have no Blu-ray discs.
Well, I wound up, I had Avatar. I've got the movie Avatar, and I bought that regular.
That's one of them that's supposed to really take advantage of Blu-ray.
For the heck of it, I went to Redbox and got the Blu-ray version, because you can get it for $1 overnight. So I started up, and I knew a couple scenes, so I wanted to check those out. So I started the regular DVD, watching that. And then I switched over to the Blu-ray. Definitely a big difference.
Oh, I bet. So yeah, it's an interesting new phenomenon that you can buy a computer monitor now that your computer can't handle.
Yeah.
You know. All right, we're gonna take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we our Soundbites, and we have Larry from Rochester, New York on the line. Hi, Larry. What's your question?
Good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
Last night on my iMac, I opened up Reminders, and I put in 4 or 5 things that I really need to get on and get done today and the next couple of days. Got up this morning and plugged in my iPhone 5, and I was under the presumption that when it synced and updated, it would pick that stuff up in Reminders and put it there, but it didn't. Is that supposed to happen, or is there something I'm missing? I looked in iTunes, and I can't seem to find any way to sync Reminders. It'll sync mail and all this other kind of stuff, but
yeah, iTunes,
not Reminders.
Right, iTunes does not sync Reminders. iCloud does. Yeah, it's a little confusing. iTunes syncs your media and your photos. iCloud syncs your contacts and calendars and reminders. The first thing to check is make sure you're using the same Apple ID on both your devices, because it syncs via your Apple ID.
Right.
And then the other thing is that when you create the reminder in the reminder program, you have to leave the program open for a few minutes so those reminders can get pushed up to the internet. So if you make a reminder and quit the app too soon, it may not get pushed up, which means the other machine, the other device won't be able to pull it down.
So right now I don't have anything in the cloud. I don't have anything in the cloud right now.
Right, so that's why your reminders aren't syncing.
Okay.
So you have to go on your computer, you have to go to the iCloud system preference. And make sure that Reminders is synced on. And on your phone, you have to go to the iCloud setting and make sure that Reminders is synced on.
Mm. Okay, well, when I make the step to the cloud, I guess I'll do that. I guess for now, I'll just live with it upstairs here in my head for what that's worth.
Yeah. You can do calendar events And iTunes will sync your calendar events if you don't want to move up to iCloud.
Ah,
but iCloud is built. Yeah, iCloud is built into OS 10.7 and later, and you can add it to Windows 7 and later. Okay. And it's built into iOS 5 and later. So you probably already have it. It's you just don't have it turned on.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't know if I was doing something wrong, but I know now.
Yep, no problem.
There
okay,
you go.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Larry. It is getting confusing. I know last week, which you but you did a great job last week. Steve was here with Michael and with Dennis.
Dennis, yeah.
And we love to have Dennis in. Michael did a great job as well. I was one step ahead of the law. One place Dave had gone an entirely different direction. That we split the law, and it was harder to catch both of us.
Yeah, we were wondering if you were together for mutual support.
Yeah. and you had a question about that too. Dropbox versus Google Drive versus SkyDrive versus iCloud.
Yeah, some of the services synchronize information like contacts and calendars, and some of the services synchronize files and documents.
Wait a minute. Rewind here. What did I just miss?
Last week, when I wasn't here, you weren't here, we were each one step ahead of the law in a different direction so that the law was split looking for us.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Smarter move on our part.
Uh-huh. No. But, I had a couple of close calls.
Yeah, but yes, so did I. But Steve had Dennis Worcester was in, and of course, Michael was in doing the board, and it was great. It was great. They were great. But one of the questions they had was Dropbox versus Google Drive versus iCloud versus... Or SkyDrive versus iCloud.
I still love my Google Drive.
I do too. But it depends on a couple of different things. Careful, George is sneaking up behind you, and you got to watch out for him.
No, I saw him come in.
There you go.
I got the TV monitor here.
Yeah, we're on the air. Yeah. It's okay. Yeah. You can come in anyway.
Nobody's
listening. Come on in.
some of the questions, which one did you start with? I started with Dropbox, and so I have most of my stuff on Dropbox and very little on Google Drive.
Well, and that's just it. What is your ecosystem?
Yeah.
You know, you're a Mac guy, so you'll be using iCloud more than you will Google Drive or SkyDrive.
But iCloud only syncs Apple program files.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't have Pages and thing yet. Why don't I have
them? It's in beta. You haven't joined the beta.
Pardon me.
It's Apple's answer to Google Docs and Office 365. Yeah. I work in the cloud.
I have it on my iPad, but I don't have it here.
Well, you have to pay for it on your iPad. So that's going to be a question. Apple's Office suite, which is called iWork, is Pages, Keynote, and Numbers for word processing, spreadsheets, and presentations, functionally equivalent and file compatible with Word, Excel, and PowerPoint.
Right.
You have to pay for it on your computer apps. You have to pay for it with apps on the iDevice. It's free on iCloud.
But it's beta.
But it's beta.
Yeah.
But it seems to work really good. So that
I have a friend who's been using it. I haven't signed up for the beta yet. Yeah, I probably should.
That implies that maybe it's going to go free on your devices too.
No,
but it's Apple, so probably not.
Yeah, really.
No.
Hello, if they can make a penny,
but the apps are only $10, so they're really cheap anyway.
No, they're cheap.
Spend a quarter to earn a penny.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, though, I have used Pages on, like I said, on a tablet and on a laptop. So I don't know if it's identical on here, but I do know that it is actually more capable than Google's Word thing, because
the graphics and page layout
and here Word Wrap. It's kind of rudimentary.
Yeah.
Certainly the stuff that I can do with the calculator thing, the spreadsheet part, is amazing. Absolutely amazing. Some of the functions that they've provided because they're on the web, and so you can do things like pull in. I can create a spreadsheet that automatically updates with stock market requests instantly, and I can do Twitter counts and all kinds of things.
Yep.
And those are automatic. Those are automatic functions on there. Their presentation software is good. not as interestingly different as Keynote, but but good. And so there's just a bunch of differences. It is less. It is more rudimentary, I guess, is the way to put it.
And one of the pleasant surprises in Pages for the Web is the fonts you get to use. Most of the internet-based document sharing programs are limited to web-safe fonts, Arial.
Yeah,
yeah, right.
But somehow Apple has got almost all of their fonts loaded into the web. So they must...
Yeah, but do they come across that way, though?
Well, when you open them in Pages on another device, yes. And Pages can save as a Word file, okay. But then you're back to...
So it's saving that font buried into the document.
Right, it's in that document. Okay. But yeah, if you save it as a Word file and give it to somebody with Word, they have to have the font you used, which is always a...
No, that's
a
what my question. Was it buried into the document along with it?
Yes. Well, that's an interesting thing. I will say that's a really interesting thing about Google's word processor.
Yes.
They have, if you've ever seen Google Web Fonts, there are 600 plus fonts available. They're all available in the word processor.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just add any one to your set of fonts.
Yep.
Yeah, you can go, blind looking at all of them.
Yeah, but you can add any one you want, and it will embed when you bring it down. At least that's been my experience under Linux.
Mm-hmm. Which, Linux is kind of the third variable.
Right.
Yeah. So if it works on Windows, it'll probably work on Mac and probably work on Linux. That's sort of the development procedure that most companies go for. You get the highest audience first, and then you get the next highest, and then... But we're back to the earlier question about what computer to get, we're seeing a pretty nice surge in Linux. Although every year is declared the year of Linux.
It's the year of the Linux desktop. This is it for sure.
Well, we think that the prices, the price for Windows has been steadily pushed down. With the Windows 8 upgrade was $20, partly because Linux is free, and the Mac upgrade, the Mountain Lion upgrade, was $20.
It's $20.
And because Apple makes their money on the hardware, and the OS is kind of just thrown in there. But Microsoft is a software company. They make their money on the software. So all of the copies of the software have to be paid for by the software.
Yeah.
And all of the engineering effort has to be paid for by the software. That's why they charge so much for access licenses to server.
Exactly.
$20,000 for a 5-user server.
Right. Well, and that's an interesting thing that I'm also seeing in terms of hardware. We're seeing it across the country. Many, many, many places are buying Chromebooks.
Yep.
Because it gives you decent enough, and it's good enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not the best, it's not the highest end, but it's good enough. You get Gmail, you get word processing, you get spreadsheet,
right.
You get all that other stuff. And if you live most of your life on the web anyway,
mm-hmm.
And I tell this to people all the time, you know, they always say, well, Chromebook only lives on the web. What do you do off the web?
Yeah.
And then they have to stop and think, maybe they've got music on their computer. Maybe, you know, if you do high-end graphics and you need Photoshop, if you do high-end sound, mm-hmm. If you do that sort of thing, then you absolutely got to have a high-end computer. But I'll tell you, you look at some of the Pixlr and a couple of the other graphics editors that are available solely online, same thing with audio editors, same thing with everything else, for the average person... You don't need more. And why spend more than a couple of $100 for a laptop that will give you what you need?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people forget about the cost of software. They buy the cheapest computer they can find. I need Microsoft Office. Well, that used to be $500. Now it's down to 150, but...
It's still 150.
And OpenOffice is still free.
And you know, you want this Libre program, Office. You want that program. Yep. You can easily spend 2 or 3 times the computer price in your software.
Yep.
Or go to Google Docs, and that's free.
Yep. We especially run into that in our company because we do a lot of graphic arts and publishing people. The Adobe Creative Suite is $2,500.
Yeah.
And... Ironically, they've stopped selling boxed copies and are forcing you to go to the Creative Cloud licensing.
Yep,
$50 a month, based on a 2-year contract. And so that's $2,500 because most people didn't upgrade every version, every other version, maybe every third version. Because it was the prices were just so high to upgrade, and then when you waited 4 or 5 years and you bought a new computer and the new OS and the old software didn't work, so now you're forced to buy new software again. It can be an unexpected expense to buy this new software.
Well, and that's why even Microsoft is moving toward a subscription model.
$100 a year.
Yep.
For home users.
For home users, $100 a year. Whereas, again, I saved that $100 by using LibreOffice, and I get it for free.
That sounds cheap. $100 a year sounds cheap, and actually, you know, that gives you 5 licenses for your home computers. But if you stop paying, all your documents stop opening.
There's the big problem.
Yep.
That's the big rub.
Yeah.
Right.
You stop paying, it quits working.
And so far, at least, Google stuff is all free. And in addition, there's the Data Liberation Front, which is an area in Google where you can go and download everything you've ever uploaded. All your documents, all your pictures, all your posts in Google Plus, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they zip it up and you can download it and it's yours. You can do what you want with it. Brilliant. I think that's a brilliant thing to do. There's also the fact that, and I don't know how it works here, of course, the iCloud stuff is still beta, so we really don't know. But under Google, if you create a document in their word processor, spreadsheet, or presentation package, or you upload one and convert it into their format, it takes no storage space. They don't count that storage space.
Right.
So I've got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of documents, and the total amount of storage space I've used is 3 PDFs.
And text documents are generally really small anyway.
Right. So they don't they don't care.
Yeah.
You know? If there's one thing Google's got, it's disk space.
You think?
And so far, at least, it's all been completely free. And I love, and I'm sure you can do it in the others as well, I love the fact that I can share things. We can, multiple people can edit a document simultaneously. I mean, that's the future, whether it's the Microsoft suite or the iWork suite or the Google suite. The reality is, it's because it's online that you find these capabilities exist.
Well, I love the calendar. Putting things on the calendar.
And sharing calendars.
That's what we do.
Yep.
I mean,
mom, dad, each of the kids.
My work schedule's up there, so Sam or Kathy need to look at it. Boom. They can look at it. You know?
You can overlay multiple calendars on top of each other.
Exactly.
They'll overlay on your phone. They'll overlay on your tablet.
Going back to the question about the reminder syncing, there was a TV commercial where dad's at the grocery store buying stuff and he's going down his list and cookies, all right? He runs and grabs cookies and ice cream. And then the cut to the kids back home typing on the computer as it synchronizes to the phone.
Yep.
Cookies, ice cream, candy. Yeah!
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, before we go to the phones, just have to remind you, Steve reminded me because he's going to a party tonight.
Stargazing
that tonight
party.
Is the Perseid meteor shower. Tonight, tomorrow night. So for those of you who are true computer geeks, you may have to go out into the big blue room, but don't worry. You won't have to go out until after they've turned off the big light.
And if you look at XKCD today, the notes for the Perseid meteor shower is that instead of falling from the sky, meteors are up from the ground.
Right. It's the XKCD guide to meteor showers. That's right. I saw it yesterday because it's a Monday, Wednesday, Friday thing. It's pretty cool. There's a lot of fun to be had sitting out and watching the meteor shower. Perseids is big. There's a lot of meteors an hour, and so it's not boring. So you go out after dark, let the kids stay up, give them a real show. Take them out in the countryside where there's no light pollution, and you're on your way. Our next caller is George from Greece, New York. Welcome, George. What's up?
I need some assistance here to see if there's something I'm doing or some improvement I could make. I use Microsoft Outlook, and I quite often operate with the dialog box Outlook Send Receive Progress open. And what I find is that the machine sets there. Of course, it clears out what I'm sending, which usually there isn't anything there.
Right.
Then it sets and grinds away on the incoming messages.
Yep.
And after a period of time, and it seems to vary, but typically 2 minutes or so, it kind of times out.
Mm-hmm.
You have to reactivate it, and sometimes reactivate 4, 5, 6 times. Is there something that I might be doing wrong, or is there something about my end of the system that isn't performing, or do you think it's on the sending end?
All right. No, George, you just have to let go.
Yeah, our first suggestion is stop using Outlook.
Yeah, well, no. But here's the thing.
I wouldn't have had to call for that.
Do you Yeah. Do you get that much mail?
No. In fact, sometimes there's very little mail.
Well, then that's why you're not getting... It's disconnecting because you have no mail.
Well, I wouldn't say it's disconnecting. I get an error.
And that's okay, too, because what happens is... if you let it go, see, the problem is not that you're getting errors, because everybody gets errors. The problem is you've got the dialog box open, so you see them.
Well, I know.
How often?
But if I didn't have the dialog box open, frankly, if I didn't get in the habit of doing that, I wouldn't know. I would think there's something more serious.
How often do you have it checking for mail?
Oh, how often do I have it checking?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's only when I open up the program that I check for mail.
Right, but when
it's not checking in between.
When the program is open, there's a schedule to automatically check for mail, and pretty much every mail reader does this.
And the general default is 10 minutes.
Nah, 5 minutes I've seen quite often.
Really?
Especially in Apple Mail. And I see a lot of people set it to 5 minutes, 1 minute even, because they want to see the mail as soon as it comes in. But
help me, Steve, where do I find where that setting is?
It's in preferences somewhere, or schedules sometimes. In Outlook, I think it calls it a schedule.
In Outlook, I think it's by your mailbox.
Yeah.
So if you have multiple mailboxes, you can set them to log in at different times.
Right.
I see send receive settings. Is it going to
yeah,
be there?
Yeah, that might be in there, yeah. So when your computer checks for mail, your mail program makes a connection over the internet to your mail server and says, "Hi, is there any mail waiting for me?" Then your computer sends the list of messages it has and asks for new messages, and the mail server sends the list of new messages, and they decide what messages you need, and it downloads them, and then it hangs up. So that may take a minute or two. If you have your program checking too often, then the signals can get crossed, and the other end will refuse a connection because you just had a connection.
Right. And that's a big thing, because many of the service... Who is your service provider? Who do you get your mail through?
I have DSL through Frontier.
Okay. Frontier, and I don't know this because I can't keep them all in my head, but Frontier may have a minimum amount of time that you must wait.
Yeah, I see a lot of problems with Roadrunner like this, too.
Right, and so if you look too often, you will get an error because they're just sick and tired of you.
And it's you plus however many hundreds of thousands of other customers checking
right.
for mail every minute. And if you have a cell phone and a tablet and a computer, you've got three devices checking for mail. And we often have a lot of customers that will get an error message on their computer because they just checked for mail on their phone, and they haven't waited long enough before the computer checks for mail again.
I don't have all of the devices that you're talking about, and I'm not aware the computer would be checking for mail other than when I want to send it.
Well, while the program is open, the auto send schedule
is normally closed.
So you open it, read one message, and close it
for my mail.
Generally speaking, if there is an error coming from the other end, it's their problem, not yours.
I see.
And there's nothing you can do about that. So if you go to check and there's an error, one of two things has happened. You've got an invalid username and password.
Which usually tells you that.
Right, which it will usually tell you that. And if, in fact, you normally get mail, that's not a problem. And the second is that you've either checked too often or the server is busy.
Would you recognize the error code?
No.
If I read it off to you?
No, I wouldn't.
If there's a text message in addition to the code, that may help.
Okay, can I read it off to you here?
Sure.
Error message, task, pop3.frontiernet.net, receiving, reported error, 0x800ccc90. That's in parentheses. Your incoming POP3 email server has reported an internal error. If you continue to receive this message, contact your server administrator.
Your mail server had an error. There's nothing you can do about it. The error was on the server.
Okay. I was suspicious of that. then I got to say, I'm not getting very good service on the other end a lot of the time.
Just for grins and giggles, you might want to run the inbox repair tool.
It certainly can't hurt.
It can't hurt. If it may be in one of the menus, or if you go to the run prompt, it's scanpst.exe.
Scanpst.exe, yeah.
Okay.
And that will rebuild your Outlook database. One of the problems of Outlook is it has this PST database where all of your mail and your settings and messages are stored in a single database file, and that database file can become corrupted. Which means that it can't receive any more mail, it can't send any more mail, and you may not notice the problem until Outlook stops opening.
The other thing you can do is get yourself one of the free accounts from like Gmail, add that as a second account to your Outlook, and see if you get the error there. If you do, the problem is on your machine. If you don't, the problem is at Frontier.
Now, you understand, I don't get the error all of the time.
No, it goes in spurts. That's why I'm suspecting the problem is the Frontier and not your end.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much.
Okie doke.
You do a great job, guys.
Thanks very much. Troubleshooting something that's happening.
That's the worst kind of problem.
Yeah.
Well, and we'll sometimes get customers that come in and say it crashed. Okay, so when it crashes every day or crashes every hour, let us know. If it crashed once since you've had it for 3 years,
it's probably a sunspot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like blaming things on sunspots.
Sure, because how can they prove you wrong?
Yeah.
on to our next caller, Don from Hilton, New York. Welcome, Don. What's up?
Well, while I was talking to you, I wanted to send some email.
Yeah.
And I use Thunderbird.
Right.
And somehow I wrote the email, and it would not go to send.
The send button isn't highlighted, or it tries
not
to send
there.
It in fair.
It disappeared. It says the only button there was send later, and I tried to fix it. Now I have nothing at the top. When I compose mail, there's nothing in the compose. I've lost all the buttons at the top.
You probably turned the toolbar off accidentally.
Yeah, I accidentally turned off the toolbar, and I can't get back to it.
Usually in the view menu, there's a toolbar command. Nick is frantically looking for it.
I have a view on the inbox that's there, but as soon as I go to right, there is nothing.
You have to go up higher to the top of the window. You should see the menu bar.
There is no menu bar.
You lost your menu bar,
on.
Too.
Do me a favor and hit F11.
Okay.
You probably dumped yourself into full screen mode. There's a mode that removes all your buttons and all your windows so that you see just your message, so you can concentrate on the message. But then you can't find your buttons.
Let me get back to all I have on.
No, look, we've only got a minute. Hit the F11 button.
Okay, I hit F11.
While you're in Thunderbird.
I'm in Thunderbird.
Did it come back?
Thunderbird. No, I lost that. I know what.
Well, try that when you can get Thunderbird back open.
Okay, I've got Thunderbird up plane. Okay. Now that has all the normal toolbars.
Okay.
Okay. But now as soon as I go to right, that comes up with no toolbar.
And does it fill the screen completely?
Yes, on the top, right, no subject.
Does it fill the screen completely?
No.
So it's just a window?
It's just a window, small window. I'm wondering, is there a way I can then say save everything?
Yes.
And start from scratch?
Stop, because we've only got 30 seconds left. So listen to me. You will close that message, so you are back to the regular Thunderbird window. You will then go to View and find Toolbars. And there should be a several toolbars, one of which is either Compose, I believe it's called Compose, or Send, or something along that line.
Make sure
that's done.
Quick bar.
And we got to go. I'm sorry. Okay. We're done. Just try those things and let me know. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everybody to whom we did not get. Next week, call earlier and more often. Listen, don't go away, because the best German music you will hear all week is about to appear here on this radio station. George will be playing it, and then we'll be back next week with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.